Session, and we will now reconvene the regular Board of Commissioners meeting. It is now 7:04.
So the next resolution is supposed to be 2017-003, not 16, as cited on the, so we have to change that. It's the one we talked about earlier that identifies the Badger meter and the Ertz, Itron Ertz, as a sole source purchase for the purpose of saving the PUD money and operation inconvenience as written up in the resolution and identified under RCW 5404070. The reason this becomes an issue is right now you can buy stuff for less than $7,500 in a month without going out for a separate bid. Anything more than that, we tend to buy these meters in, particularly when we take over water systems. We pay quite a bit more at a shot to do that. This would make us in compliance with the state requirements. And the state auditor actually brought it up at one point that we need to make sure if we're going to purchase things such as meters that are from a particular vendor, and we need to make sure it's approved so by the board. Answer any questions. This format's pretty similar to what we did with the electrical side of things.
And that's the low income rates.
Want to ask a question of Rick. Are you comfortable with this in terms of it meeting the requirements of the law on procurement? You know, whether we can reflect back to a previous purchase and bidding process and apply it now?
Well, the standard is the supply has to be clearly and legitimately limited to a single source. And so what the staff would have to do is to make the case that it is very clear that there's only one way in which to procure these meters, and this is the way. So Jim, is it because of the compatibility? Is that why
right.
Requesting a single?
Right. In fact, and that's why I referred back when we originally went out for the RFP for the meters, and I had the supplied in the discussion part. We supplied the description of the particular hybrid of the Badger meter tied into the Itron ERT as a method that we had selected. And we selected that one. I think we bought probably 3,000 meters at the time because that's probably how many we've had. We're up to about 15,000 now. So to go out and bid another, you could do it, but you would not be compatible with the unit that goes down the road and picks up the messages. Most of these meter companies and ERTs tend to have a proprietary collection information. Same thing when we go out to bids for the electric meters. You know, you could say, well, did half this way and half that way and mix them. Well, you go, well, no, that doesn't make any sense. Well, it's the same way here. We have a collector system with it that's Itron, works with the Itron. That particular module works with the Badger meter, and so that's how we've been purchasing. So it's a single unit. We can order the parts separately, but they go together as well.
And if that's correct, then that would be a, in my opinion, a legitimate sole source request. And oftentimes when you deal with proprietary sorts of equipment, there is only one source to if you want to replace or upgrade that equipment. So it's a fairly common basis to declare a sole source.
And the issue here, Jim, isn't it that we're not replacing every meter we have in the field? What we're basically saying is we have to buy a whole bunch of new meters because we're taking on systems that have non-standard PUD meters.
And additionally, the meter, the ERTs fail because they have battery life. So
sure, they have to replace it over time.
And we don't want to replace them with a different...
So if this was a, if we were looking at replacing every single meter we would have, we would be in a different situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one way that I look at it sometimes is, can you write specs in such a way that there's any other possible source of supply that would be, you know, that would work equally as well?
Mm-hmm.
And if you can't, then that's a pretty good argument that you have a sole source. Otherwise, you design the specs, go out for a bid, and, you know, there might be more than one source of this because it would meet the specs.
And in this case, that we want that one particular kind of equipment because it works with the other equipment we already have. It's also economical and has advantages of working with our communication, and there happens to be only one retailer for that equipment in our area. So it seems like it's justified. Well, I will move to that we adopt resolution 2017-03 to authorize a sole source purchase of Badger water meters and Itron encoder receiver transmitters.
One second.
Any excuse me. Any further discussion or questions? Hearing none. All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Resolution 2017-003 has been passed.
Under discussion, I have Barney's resolution. I didn't get any comments, but I'm leaving it there. If you guys are satisfied with it, what I'd like to do then is get a clean copy and have you sign it, and then come back at a later time and have the board pass the resolution and present it to Barney in a frame so that it's all done at once. But again, I'm not an English major, so I don't take any criticism to the verbiage or anything. This will be pretty tight getting into the frame, but it kind of summarizes. I did add a glossary in the back so that Barney could know that I explained what BPA is.
Put acronyms
USDA.
On there for him. You should have made it, we should have called him BB and added him as an acronym.
PUD.
Whereas BB initially volunteered. I think you should. Well, the only correction I have is my first name. Let's just call it Jeff because Jeffrey and the R and the E are in the wrong spots. So let's just make it consistent with all the other resolutions we got and just call me Jeff.
Yeah, no,
I won't get it spelled wrong. So it looked fine to me.
Okay.
I appreciated his service.
So I'll clean it up, and we won't pass the next board meeting, but we'll have you guys sign a copy that we can frame, and then when we bring him in, so get it. The next one is just a draft of a transfer of an assessment from one parcel to another. That's how we keep track of the number of allocated assessments for the large on-site septic systems and for water systems. The treasurer is the one that actually keeps track of these because they were assessed against a property. And so in order to move them, even though they've all been paid, we send it up to the treasurer. She moves it from lot to lot, and then we end up with a printout that we keep, and it's updated periodically. And so if somebody comes in and says, hey, I want to hook up to this lot, the CSR, whoever's there, can pull it up off the treasurer's and make sure it's moved. Otherwise, we get into a confusion. Well, I moved this to somebody else. And, well, Jim said I could do it. Well, Jim's been gone 5 years. You know, give us some kind of proof. So this is more of a housekeeping error to keep track of the assessments. They're pretty high, as you can see. That's $10,000. It just allows them to connect to the drain field. They additionally have to pay for the septic tank and station. So that's simply, if you have any more questions, let me know.
Ocean Grove has had a lot of these, haven't they,
years? Like I said, there's only a certain amount, and some of the parts I was explaining to Jeff earlier, a couple of the parcels might have been together, and a guy bought one and two, and then because the lots are so small, they put just one house on that particular two parcels.
I remember an ad in the paper. Somebody wanted to sell it. Remember that?
That was the water ones they were trying to sell. We said, you can't sell them. You got to give them back to us. And, we're a little
under. Nice try.
2005, Debbie's trying to clean up the personnel manual and consolidate it and pull in all the various policies that are out there, and over the periods of time. This is just the first attempt to start consolidating it so that's one document and that all the resolutions are the most current and we get rid of the old ones.
Can I hand you your sleeping pill for the night?
Sure.
Is this the combined policies?
This is the combined policies.
Oh, my gosh.
Great.
I wanted to be able to explain to you a little bit about the formatting of this. Rick, there's one for you.
Thank you.
Jim. Anything you see in black ink in this document is existing policy that existed somewhere. That's 99% of what you're looking at. Small, minor kind of housekeeping edits are made in red and called out in the memo that was included in your packet. Just things I thought, why not? Let's just clean up now. Small things like EEOs added to the protected class list, things like that. I added a definition section as far as we continue to work on this manual and revise it, propose additions to it. We can be consistent in the terminology. So that's what it is. Red is new, black is existing. My intention was not to change anything, just consolidate it under one format that we could expand from, subtract from, those kinds of things. There were components of the existing policies that we no longer follow that practice, so I have eliminated those sections. It's a pretty long list because I kept it word for word. If you ever want to see that, just let me know.
Thank you for putting all this together.
Sure.
And getting us organized.
We're trying.
And part of that, too, is getting the union contracts, and particularly the laborers, are trying to line everything up so there isn't three sets or four sets of operational. There's one with some variations among the contracts. But she's doing a good job of putting that together. And believe me, tracking down where all these things are is a chore in itself. Keep moving. PUD rates and charges.
And did you have information on this? Because there wasn't anything in the packet, was there?
Well, no, I was waiting for Joel, and he just sent it to me today.
Okay.
Do you have it?
Okay. I'm guessing Leo's going to want one of these too.
No. Do you have two, Pamela, didn't you?
Okay.
Just want to make sure I get them all away.
It's pretty simple chart.
No, I just have the one copy. I'm sorry. I'd be happy to go make another one.
You can have mine when we're done. We asked Joel for an opinion on the rates and the question that Leo asked, and this is as you can see, I just got back today. This is what his comment was. Basically, he pulled out two slides that were used in the presentation when he talked about the rates to the board, and trying to explain how he interpreted how he set the rates up. And so he disagrees with what Leo had proposed as far as what he's saying. He's saying that the transportation to the site was one charge, and then the reading of the internet was a separate charge, is what he was indicating. And I think he tried to summarize that in his cover sheet for the board.
Jim, what is the timing on that presentation as compared to the recording of the presentation that Leo provided us by that
Leo's was prior
email.
To this presentation, and part of the reason we went back is because Leo asked good questions at the original when NoNet was here, and NoNet didn't really provide very good answers. So the board says, okay, we want Joel to come up with rates for the board. And so, because it was, quite honestly, we're not telecom people. And Joel does this partially, and he did a lot of work. He went around and checked with other PUDs and other areas that he works for, and he came up with the rates that were put there. And part of that was, again, I think he pulled these off of the presentation he gave on the rates when he came up with them to the board. And then we asked him, well, how do you interpret Leo's question? And he said, well, this is how I interpret it, is the one that presented the raise.
Public comment. A question.
So then he says you have to put internet on top of transport?
That's what he was saying, yes.
Okay. So Kitsap doesn't charge it that way. Collin doesn't charge it that way. Pacific County doesn't charge it that way. And then it's just a layer 3 product. You buy your layer 3 product, and that's delivered to you that way.
I was under the impression in our working with Joel that what we would get was pricing that would be competitive in the marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
And this raises some concern for me because, you know, the big problem that we have in the county, or one of the problems related to internet, is the fact that we have an environment that doesn't seem to be hospitable to internet service providers, or we'd have more of them. So is Bill here? There he is. Can you verify what Leo's saying? Are you in a position to do that?
This is one of the reasons why I thought we hired Joel, and Joel's not clarifying it apparently very well.
The issue is not so much what went down in the meeting here and what was decided. The issue that I'm raising, which is, I think, addressing Leo's concern, is why are we pricing it differently than the PUDs around us?
I don't have a good answer to that question. Yeah, if Leo's right, we are breaking away from that, then maybe we should reanalyze the rates.
And what I'm asking, if you have the time to do it, you can independently verify that.
I can work with Paul Avis from Kitsap, whom I invited. We finally finalized a date, or at least got a date for him to come up here for a workshop. February 13th, Monday. Please check your calendars, because we had a lot of difficulty coming up with a date.
And what was the time on that,
Bill? We're going to try 1:00. He has a board meeting himself in the morning, so he can be here that afternoon.
So that's a Monday?
Correct.
Monday the 13th at 1?
Cab that day as well.
Oh!
2:30.
Could we move it earlier?
I can try.
Like 11 or something?
Yeah, we can try.
When's
for
his board meeting?
His board meeting is like 9 to 10.
Oh.
So he would have some difficulty getting here by 11.
Or even 11:30 or 12.
Yeah, we could try for noon maybe.
Okay.
I know you guys have a lot of questions, and I was hoping 90 minutes would be adequate, at least. So we could talk about some of these questions about regarding the differences and similarities between our rates.
Okay.
So I just want to comment, you know, when you go to Wave or you go to CenturyLink or Comcast and you go, I want to buy internet, how much does it cost? They don't go, well, you got to pay this much for internet, and then you got to pay us this much to get it to you. You know, they don't. It's not broke out that way. So, which makes it really difficult, you know, to kind of to put it all together. So it's just this particular rate. So, and you know, back in May when we had the workshop, Rich Knoll had put together the rate sheet, which basically Joel stuck to the same rate sheet, but then he stuck a transport cost on top of the internet, whereas if you listen to the audio recording, Rich was like, now we simplified it, we've bundled it all together, and this is what it's going to be. And that, back in May, the only protest I had was they took out the end user ports, which the other counties, the other PUDs offer to deliver the service to your customer. So like in Collin County, I pay $75 to get service to a customer, right, from my equipment at the Collin County PUD office. So that was my only concern, was, well, hold on, you just took the mechanism for delivering the service for basically $75, $100 a month, you just took it out. That was the only problem I had. And then now, and then Joel came in, and it just turned into this big.
Well,
yeah. Again, we can get some clarity. I think once we have Paul here asking some key questions, see what he thinks is similar to Kitsap's rights. I'd like to see that comparison.
Yeah. Good.
So, Leo, you're hearing from Commissioner Collins. He's interested in wanting to make sure our rates are competitive, and so am I. And staff's going to reach out to Kitsap, and we're going to have that workshop. So, hope you can attend.
Right. So, and then I have one other concern, which I've mentioned to some other staff members and others. The fact so as at the last meeting I mentioned, the somehow the end user ended up getting a quote of how much was going to cost to install service to a location for $1,500. Well, now my cost has gone up to $1,899, and so it's really hard to go back to somebody and say, well, it's $1,899 before I even put any work into this on top of that. And then this actual location is an anchor institution, and it was brought to my attention that you guys actually had gotten $3.6 million in the BTOP grant to install the anchor institution, this is an anchor institution. And so I'm being charged $1,500 to do something that you guys were already given $3.6 million to complete.
Good point, Leo, good point.
Well, the grant connected everybody that the grant was supposed to connect. So, well, you can say no. You can say this institution wasn't connected under the grant. We have costs to run fiber to them. You as a board can say, run it for free, and I'll run it for free. Otherwise, I've got costs that we turn in to say, and I don't care if it's Leo, the city, Wave, whoever. We charge for our costs, and they're not huge costs, but they're what we have in to connect this customer.
What are we talking about? I have some concept of what the anchor institutions are. What are we specifically talking about, and how is it that this particular anchor institution wasn't connected initially?
Many of the anchor institutions weren't connected, or they were connected via, in this case, they put a radio, and it's on the wireless system for the port. Port accepted that or whatever. So at one time there was a connection. It was a crappy connection. It's terrible. But that doesn't mean I still don't have costs. So
sure. Are we talking about the port?
We're talking about the port. Yes.
Mortgage office, correct?
Correct. Right, yeah, they put a wireless, they did use the Mobile ESA, put a wireless unit on top of the bathroom at the Boat Haven, where the actual anchor, it was supposed to be located, and it's actually specified address at 2601 Washington Street, which is not the bathroom. It's the mortgage office. And so it wasn't even located in the correct spot. And then knowing that, did say that they would hook me up there for $400. They'd hook it up there. But the only problem is when the travel lift goes by and pulls a boat out, the service goes out. So, and then when the travelers come back from pulling out a boat and goes to the washdown, well, the washdown's directly in the way. I would earn more in outage credits than I could ever be charged for in billing for service out. So I don't think it's fair if $3.6 million was...
Well, I don't think we can get into how the VTOP grant was actually applied. I have some issues around that myself.
Right.
So I think if the other commissioners agree with me, we refer this back to the staff and we'll take their recommendations.
Okay, so one other thing is that Kevin has said numerous times to the commissioners that it cost him $5,000 a mile to build. The fiber extension to the mortgage office was about 200 feet. So about $1 a foot, I would calculate that out to be about $200.
Wait,
not $1,500.
It takes that much for a lineman to walk down to the site. The cost isn't just a string fiber. String and fiber is fairly economical. But I have to bring splicers in. This particular case, there's not a splice case on the pole. I've got $400 in a splice case.
$400? I don't think it's $60.
This has to be done after hours. Again, we have some fixed costs. If the board tells me don't charge what we think it's worth, we won't. We can. Leo's right. As the board, you can direct me to do.
Well, they can't do a gift to government fund too.
I don't want to totally disagree
with that.
We gave the cost to Noinette. Noinette will tell you our costs are as cheap as they're getting anywhere around for people to do the same type of work. We not only have to run it to the building, we provide a conduit into the building, we provide equipment in the building. It's not as simple as stringing from point A to point B. Leo's correct. It's two spans of fiber. It's not 200 feet, but it's two spans of fiber. But a lot goes into both ends, and a lot goes into making it work. And not only have that, I have handholds, 52, that have to be done on the to get the fiber to either back to our shop or to the Jefferson County or the fire department there in Port Townsend. Then once you get into Port Townsend, there's equipment there that someone has to do work on.
I have a question for Bill, because this kind of gets back to this issue of transport. Leo's talking about this $1,500, and he's talking about the additional on top of the $1,500, et cetera. Bill, is it possible to talk to the guy from Kitsap before our next meeting, which is the 7th, and come back with, rather than waiting until the 13th to get his feedback? That would be helpful, I think.
Sure. There's actually numerous people I can talk to and ask them how they interpret our rates and how they compare with their own. I try to get more perspectives.
Honestly, Cloud's closer to our model because they use an excess capacity model where they have one person running their telecom. Kitsap PUD, quite honestly, supplements their telecom business with tax dollars. $2 million a year or something like that. So they have considerably larger staff. I don't know how many people they have.
Sure, but the whole transport versus internet access, those are services that anyone who's doing the telecommunications.
Right, I was just saying, look at clowns. Right.
I guess my point was just, could we come back at next meeting with that?
And I agree, because I don't want to spring questions on him.
Sure.
I think prepare him for what we're interested in.
We also need to look at what Wave and CenturyLink charges for the same.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Because they're in our service territory.
Right.
Sure.
I deal with Wave and CenturyLink all the time. I know they're, if it's a true level 3, what you're allowed to do, and if it's
Well, that's a retail. They're retailers.
We can't do a comparison without looking at the local ISP and CLET.
Well, I'm just saying, that's a retail rate, that's not a wholesale.
And we
right?
can
right.
get a wholesale from.
Well,
we're trying to.
To move on.
So I just want to clarify for Jeff that the $1,500 I'm talking about is not for transport.
I understand.
That's just for installing 2 spans of fiber.
I understand. I understand. So
it should have already been paid for by the
company. While we're on this subject, there's an excellent survey being sent out by Mason 3, and I sent it to Bill, that we might want to piggyback and do the same thing of how they're seeing what's available to their customers. It's just a pretty basic, simple survey. You can go online and see it there. But anyhow, I just wanted to throw that out.
All right.
Do we want to give Kevin any guidance?
What do you want to guide?
Well, we didn't quote Leo directly. We quoted KnowNet. We feel it's a reasonable rate for the work we're doing.
Quite honestly, we still have a contract with KnowNet to do a lot of this stuff. We're not out of that agreement with them, so you should be going through KnowNet, not through Kevin anyway, unless we've changed the way we're doing things.
Well, I mean, KnowNet thinks the agreement is that we give them a cost and we run the fiber. That's their take on the agreement. Don't mind doing it. And it's pretty straightforward. We come up with what we think it's going to take for you to do the work. We throw the splicing in and the equipment we have to purchase, and we come up with the cost.
Well, then KnowNet puts their markup on it, too.
That's why it came out to $18.99.
According to KnowNet, ours are non-reoccurring costs for install. They don't mark it up per KnowNet. They have some reoccurring costs that they mark up, or if they do something specific in the building, usually in the building I provide the patch panel, that kind of stuff. So, but my email on this particular site with KnowNet is that there was not a markup. I don't know if there is or not, but they just take our price and push it on to the customer.
They roll it into their contract with them for, and that's their,
well, they,
what they pay for monthly recurring costs?
No, it's one time.
If it's one time, sorry. If it's not a large bill, then it's just a one-time fee, correct?
Well,
so I was going to try and sum this thing up. And it seemed like our sum up was, originally the question was, what is included in the rates, transport or not? We got one opinion by one person. We had some other information in the notes. What the commission asked was, please check, because we are concerned that we are not being competitive. And staff is saying you're going to check before the next meeting. I think all this stuff about whether the port building was connected or not connected or supposed to have been or not is not the issue at the point right now, and we're not asking you to look into that, is my understanding. Is that clear enough for everybody, or is there more to it?
The question that I still have is, you know, I agree with you up to the point that you're talking about the port building, because I think that's a secondary issue. And the question is, going back to what Kevin was asking us, do we want him to give him any particular guidance in terms of the cost of that, or should that just be all passed on to the ISP if that's the way it would ordinarily go without our doing anything.
Well, unfortunately, though, that's not the only one that got that quote. I got it. Greg England at the Port of Port Townsend got it, so it's really easy for him to go, well, no. Kevin Street says it's going to cost me $1,500 to hook up because I got a forwarded email from Greg, from Chuck Freeman at KnowingNet, from Greg England forwarding an email from Kevin Street to KnowingNet. So it bounced all the way from Greg England to my email.
So is the port uncomfortable paying that?
I'm uncomfortable paying that.
But that's not a cost that you would pass on to that particular customer?
Is it something I would pass on? No, it's more of a fact of, do I think it's morally right for you to charge me $1,500 when the service you are obligated to provide the installation of the service in the grant you got from the Broadband Technologies Opportunities Program.
Okay. At this point, I think we need to move forward because it does sound like it's more of a moral question, and we can't go back and undo what was done by KnowingNet under the BTOP grant. And it certainly sounds like they did a half-assed job in setting up the port, but I don't know that that falls back to us to correct that.
You're the grant recipient.
If either of the other commissioners feel differently about that, I'm certainly open to being persuaded.
The BTOP grant, it was wonderful that that was given to Jefferson County, supposedly, but we're responsible, but we had no say-so of how it was hooked up or who got it and who didn't. It's like these anchor institutions. I can't tell you how many lists I have that has changed and changed. They even had the coffee shop at the fort as an anchor institution on one list. I mean, come on. Why wasn't it done where it was needed rather than where it was wanted, but it's too late now.
Yeah.
We're just responsible for somebody else's wishes.
And I don't have enough information on this to understand what our responsibility is.
No one that doesn't either.
Yeah. So I think this isn't the time to try and.
But I can see Leo's point, and something we've got to realize: Leo is the only one that gives a damn about broadband in Jefferson County. I'm sorry, there's nobody else comes to the meetings. You know, you bring them. I've talked to them all. They don't care.
Right.
I mean, I suppose I could use the wireless, but you guys want to take down the wireless anyways and get out of the whole mobile ESA until whatever building. So, I mean, that's going to have to go away. I mean, so you're going to end up having to run the fiber to me anyways because now you got a customer on it.
Well,
but
you know, unfortunately, I don't think any of the three of us here have the technical expertise, and I know that the advertisement was posted for a telecom person, and I think some of these issues are just going to have to be deferred until we have on the staff somebody who can advise us and can negotiate a lot of these things in the field so it doesn't have to come here.
Mm-hmm. So it'll still come here. I'm just going to tell you. All right. It'll still come here. Because
all right.
If you give us direction to charge people, that's what we're going to do. And there's many, many institutions that aren't hooked up. And if we make an exception here, are you going to make an exception on?
That's my concern, that you open that door, you're not going to be able to close it.
Yeah.
And this, frankly, this topic wasn't, you know, we were talking about another different question, and we haven't been properly briefed on this whole thing tonight, and we don't have time to deal with this tonight. So I think we need to move on.
Well, whether it was hooked up or not, it's whether it was hooked up or properly.
Right. Okay. So we'll get some more information in our next meeting on part of your question, and that's the best we can do right now.
So, Jim, do you want to move us forward?
OLECAP, Bill wrapped up this agreement with OLECAP with the to do weatherization program. Bill, do you want to?
Sure. So the intent of this agreement is to partner with and leverage the dollars and expertise that OLECAP has as a CAP agency to do some low-income weatherization work. Commissioner King, you will recognize this as something similar to what we did in the previous rate period. I think, Ken, you were here as well. But we have refined this over time based upon previous experience working together. Colin Graham, no relation, from OLECAP, helped draft this. This is this document is actually somewhat of a stock document that comes out of the efforts of an organization called, Jeff, you know, Energy
Northwest? Project. Oh, the Energy Project.
Yeah.
Yes.
They work with other utilities and CAP agencies across the Bonneville region to find opportunities to work together to benefit low-income households and getting them more energy efficient. They produce a document that looks very similar to this. I think it was actually CalEd's that was the sort of model utility. And we have gone in there and looked at some specifics to come up with this draft. They will, the goal is to have them spend up to $30,000 to improve homes. Those homes will be approved by myself in cooperation with OLECAP. OLECAP will do the income verification to see that they are eligible for the low income program. And the term of this is to expire at the end of the rate period with the idea that if this works for both parties, we'll do it again in the following rate period.
Rick, have you looked this over?
I could take some questions.
They're not asking. Well, the only thing I thought, I want to thank you for working collaboratively with OLECAP, and this is exactly the kind of cooperation I think we, you know, citizens in this county need to take our program funds, use them for what they'll cover, get another organization that can help the person with the same home use their funds for things our funds can't cover and mm-hmm. end up with a better covered home. I just see some formatting issues, like on subsection 10 when it goes to the indemnification stock language, the font gets all wonky and is bold. Yeah. And then under subsection 12, services performed by agency missing, you know, there's some mm-hmm. I see some
yep.
stuff like that, but other than that, it seemed like a pretty straightforward agreement, and I, you know, I think this is smart for us to be working with OLECAP in this way.
Commissioner Randall, I'm sorry,
go ahead.
The bold in the contract is something that I inserted.
Oh, okay.
And it's bold because I believe it's Title 51, that's the workers' comp code. In order for someone to waive the rights to workers' comp as an exclusive remedy, it has to be clear in the contract.
So this is very clear.
Yeah. Actually, some of the contracts that I've written, the vendor actually has to initial that.
Okay. And well, I stand corrected there.
And we've done this in the past.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, they took off more than what they could chew the last couple of times, and they didn't end up spending the money, if I remember right.
There was some mutual confusion. I think part of it was the fact that we're trying to implement a new program. At that time, we didn't know all the things that we were eligible to pay for, and so they gave us kind of a long laundry list of measures or things that they had done that they wanted to get reimbursed for. And I had to sit with BPA and go item by item through to figure out whether or not they were eligible. And as it turned out, most items were, and we didn't know. So, and that includes Andrew Miller to BPA. He was kind of surprised. So we did a lot of stutter steps, and that included with Cascadia Consulting to kind of move our way through it. But since then, Carl and I have been working a lot more together, and I think we've got a much better feel of how to execute this.
I did find one more typo under subsection 12. The last sentence read, the provisions of sections R through 12 of this agreement, and I think that's supposed to be 1 through 12.
Yeah.
So just, I guess, check the typos and bring it back for the next meeting?
Yes.
Is this enough insurance, I promise?
$1 million?
Well, that's a pretty standard amount, $1 million. You know, it's all based on your assessment of the amount of risk involved if the contract's not honored. Mm-hmm. I don't think you're talking about a large amount of money here, but, Bill, you could probably tell the board a lot more than I could on that.
Well, each job itself, we're talking about no more than $10,000 total. I don't know about insurance, mm-hmm, per se, but for the licensed and bonding jobs that we've seen in the program, they're bonded for $1 million. So that seems pretty standard to me.
One thing, but Commissioner King, you bring up a good point, and that is when you have an unusual contract that you don't see every day, this is probably one of them, it isn't a bad practice to call your risk pool and say, you know, because they're experts in this, how much insurance should we have and what type should we have? And then, you know, and then once you get it in there, it's you don't have to check it all that often, once in a while.
I think Bonneville requires all contractors to be licensed and bonded for $1 million.
So the $30,000 that we would pass to OLECAP for low-income weatherization is money that's come back to us from BPA, and for their services, OLECAP gets 12.5%. Is that correct?
Yep, that would be the performance payment that comes out of the EEI budget.
Which stands for?
EEI is the Energy Efficiency Incentive Program.
Which, again, is the BPA program.
It's the BPA
program. So the BPA program is paying for the improvements and the overhead.
Got it.
Okay. And the idea then is the next cycle, we would see another one of these, and there might be the same or more or something.
Correct.
Around
the dollar sum would likely be more.
Okay. I don't have any more questions.
I don't.
No, I'm good. Just we want to be sure that the $30,000, what we're getting for $30,000.
Right.
I think it's a good program. It's probably one of the better programs. It's just getting it off of the ground. Mm-hmm. They were going to do like 10 a year there for a while, and then they realized they couldn't do it.
We stumbled out of the block collectively. But Jeff, I think we're a lot better prepared now.
If I remember right, okay. Jeff didn't want to take it on at all when we originally mentioned it to him.
He's ready.
This is too much money.
Keep her going, baby.
Well, moving right along.
So the union contract, we'll break into a closed session in a bit to talk about. The goal is to, at the next board meeting, we're hoping to approve the contract with the labor's union. Basically, it's trying to get everything lined up pretty much with the IEBW so that we have commonality, so that makes all the accounting and all the other various work processes work. I think we're moving in that direction pretty steadily. We'll talk about the actual details of it in the closed session.
later on this evening?
Yes.
On the back page.
Back page. Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
The next thing is space allocation. As you know, we're running out of space. I think Jeff brought up part of it last time. And so I tried to do a simple memo that just kind of describes where we are as far as people, where they're going, and how we're going to allocate this space. And I gave a number of options that are available for additional space. We probably have the lowest number of staff members of any PD by quite a bit. We tend to be pretty thrifty on that, but we're hiring more people, and unfortunately we don't have much places to put them. As you can see, some of the offices used to be, I think, closets, and we have people in them. So, and then people are continuing to complain about our meeting areas and whatnot, and we're going to hire our new CFO, just hired two people today, so we're making progress. But then we have to figure out where we're going to put them space-wise. And we've talked about this over the course of 2 or 3 years now. There's the do-nothing method, which we're kind of on right now, where we squeeze everybody in, just squeeze and squeeze. Or we can look at rearranging, and there's a couple options for this room and where Kevin is and across the street. We can look at more temporary buildings. I did a space analysis. We were move everybody to double-wides over around... over where Kevin is, it'd probably take 4 double wides to make up this space if we were going to desert it, and you'd end up with 4 more double wides. We could purchase another building. We'd probably sell this one in that case and get some money out of this. Or we can look at new construction. In the budget last year, we did program, I think, $25,000 for a architect to look at the options. I think Barney was pretty insistent on doing that. And we looked at $35,000 just to upgrade this office here, so at least we don't have cords running across the floor tripping people. And my original plan was to make the meeting room here larger instead of, so we'd have a bigger meeting place. But now I think it would be to do away with this meeting room, and we just do the meetings on the road and make more office space here so we can fit people in until we get a permanent solution. So... basically, I looked into the Union Bank again just to see what was available there. It's still for sale. In fact, there's a huge sign in front of it. It looks like they have gotten some interest from somebody, but I don't know what that would be. There's a lot of organizations you don't even know exist that are government. I think one of them was one of the health agencies. We're looking at that for a meeting area. I did ask a question to lease, and they said, no, we're not going to lease it. And they were pretty emphatic about that, or at least the people, CBRE, were the realtor, because they asked the question. So the question then becomes, other than what we had normally planned to go forward, was to hire an architect to, but only $25,000, it had to be an RFQ, because architects and engineers have to be done a different way, to look at our space requirements and to come up with a... probably better estimate. Particularly, I would think if we hired an architect, we'd be looking at construction at Four Corners. That's fine, but the reality of building anything new in this county takes years. It's not a, you know, it took double wide, took what, a year and a half to get that in there. It's just a prefab double wide. I mean, good Lord. So, and then the other part was to take $35,000 and fix this place up so that it would be, and then we would basically put the PUD board would move along. We could do special meetings over in Kevin's area. I don't know if that would be the permanent location for the meeting room until we make any decisions permanently based upon recommendations from the architect if we hire somebody. If you want to go that way, I'm just trying to move this meeting along here.
Yeah, but what did we spend on the last double wide we put at Four Corners?
120 altogether?
Yeah, the $6,000 to $9,000 for the trailer, and that put it on the site. We put in a new sewer system to accommodate future expansion. So we had a lot into this first one that we wouldn't have into whatever you do moving forward. There's the sewers designed for additional people, all that kind of stuff was put in at that time.
Mm-hmm.
I'll bet we closer to 150, but we did a lot of preparatory work moving forward.
Yeah.
Part of the problem too is that it'd be nice if we could just move them in, but part of the condition, we thought we had to set up the permit so that we could just move more things in there. But there is a requirement. We can't create any more impervious area without going back to the county to get the permit to go forward. Mm-hmm. So you'd have to build it basically on, if you were to put another one on place that was already impervious, you'd have to create more impervious by poking holes someplace else, I guess, to work around it. Not something that's hard to do. Again, the process with the county is it's just that may break up, require hearing examiner. We might have a hearing examiner again. So it's something that can be done. Plus, double wides, they've already got complaints from the linemen about the floors not matching, the roof's leaking, you know, double wides, a double wides, a double wides. So
there's also no insulation in the ceiling. You can look through that thing, it's just studs and plywood up there.
Yeah, we bought a used one. If you did something along those lines, you'd probably buy a new one this go around.
Well, my thought on this, and everybody's heard me rattle on, I think we ought to sell this dump. And I can't imagine we can fix it for $35,000. The septic system, I know, is junk. The building is amazingly poor shape.
It would have a remarkably wonderful value for another purchaser, I'm sure.
Well, we had the food bank. Last I talked to them, they wanted to buy it. So, you know, it's set up for a deal like that. But my biggest thing is we need to get under one roof. This, you know, the annex here, Chimicum, Four Corners. I can relate to.
But your argument is to go, let's look at Union and push them forward. I agree with you. That would be the solution in my mind.
Well, not the Union Bank building is the same thing we got now. We've got people in Port Townsend, we've got people here, I mean, and the annex. I mean, it.
Well, it's not unusual. I don't mean to argue, but it's not unusual to have people located in different locations. But you would want to consolidate, I think, the functions in one place, not necessarily the people portion of it.
To do a time study on wasted time going from Four Corners to Chimicum to the annex, I think you would be amazed how much time is being spent.
Let me just ask a question. Do any of the three of us see the current situation we have as a long-term solution? No. Okay.
No,
we can just scratch off one of those, so just do nothing, at least for the long term. We don't want to do that.
We got it. We have to. You know, you're hiring all these people. I mean, we only got so many broom causes.
Well, I would like to see...
No, we run out of those.
I would like to see us get an idea of what would have to be done to the Union Bank building, whether we'd be required to put in an elevator or
Absolutely.
Whether...
Yeah. Guaranteed.
And what that would cost. And essentially... cost out, what would we have to put into it? It's clear we're not going to lease it or rent it at this point. So what would it cost us to make that really suitable for our purposes?
And I would think, because the other logical option is expansion at Four Corners, that we could have that architect calculate our space needs and look at both options. And
I just, you're in the city, you want to do it there. Spend some time in the county and see what the people think of putting it in the city. They ain't for it,
well,
I guarantee you.
Right, and at the same
time, not either.
If that building was somewhere else, I would be for it there too. I'm looking at what...
Have you looked at it?
Just from the outside, I haven't been in it
you
for a while.
You ought to see it.
But, I mean, can you think of other options? We don't want to stay in this way long term.
Yep,
and even if we say, let's say the Four Corners doing something there is the best solution, we're still going to be stuck making do here for a while. So we have kind of this short-term thing where we kind of have to make do. And it seems like we got two options. Find something existing that we can work with and fix up a little bit to make work, or add on at Four Corners, right? Do the three of us agree that those are the two
options? Well, I'm not sure that Wayne has identified all of the options that he has in his mind.
I have a few.
Well, you're saying that.
My thought when we took this mess over, Four Corners, we own a lot more property than it's fenced. I don't know if you know that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We have the property. We have the septic system. We can modify that building, and Don will tell you, that building was built to be able to add on to mm-hmm. when they built it.
Right.
It's not, we don't have to tear it down and build a new one.
Right.
We can add on to it.
Right.
Or we could build a new one.
Right.
I mean, we have a lot of property there.
Right. But I guess my only point is, it comes down to, I think the citizens in this county, I think they would support what we're talking about. I think they would say, this is a dump. We got to have a meeting room that works. We want these facilities to work for this PUD long term. But I think they also are going to want to know, what's it going to cost? And if we can buy an existing building for $2 million less, just for example, than building new or adding on, I think that's going to be relevant.
I'll just about bet you're going to spend $1 million putting an elevator in that building.
Well, let's find out.
There's nothing to hook it to.
Let's find out what we need, and if we even need an elevator. I'm not sure that we do.
I'm sure you have to.
Well, let's
this,
find
this Disability Act.
Sure.
I mean, if you've ever been there, mm-hmm. it says disability, ring the bell. That don't fly anymore.
Right. Well, a ramp into the door won't cost $1 million, but
well,
an elevator won't.
Okay.
So,
but I'm. You have to show me why the moving the offices to Port Townsend is the thing to do. I'm not.
I'm open to either solution, but I think the point that Jeff raises about cost is a huge factor. And that's why I think we need to move forward with some sort of a study to have some actual figures in front of us so we know what our options are.
But I'm not in favor of building a Mason 3 PUD. That's not on the deal. Maybe in 50 years. But, you know, we have the property. We have the septic system. I mean, Kevin has a drawing of how to do it.
Well, you know, if we're talking about the difference between adding on to the existing building or buying the Union Bank building and then spending $1 million on top of that to make it compliant with ADA and who knows what else, I'd like to have confirmation of what it costs to add on, because I hear what you're saying about the location seems to be a bit more central at Four Corners, more accessible. And we've got a big county.
We do.
So I just want to move forward, because we're all in agreement
yep.
that the status quo
ain't gonna work.
Yep.
Is not sustainable.
So we budgeted $25,000. Why not put out the RFQ and ask the professional to analyze our current needs, square footage needs, and look at these two options that we've identified?
Okay.
Yeah, sounds good to me.
Okay.
But let's hire an architect that understands a utility. Not just an architect.
Well, there's commercial architects.
No,
and
I mean,
architects.
I know there's commercial that has done utility. It's a whole different ballgame, this utility business, than Joe Blow's lemonade stand.
I think that's a good suggestion. Though. We're not.
So how would the tell us how the RFQ process would work?
We would put out an advertisement in a paper, a local paper, 17 days prior to the deal. We'd ask for, and I'd probably advertise in the state one too, just request qualifications for
right.
architect that has experience in commercial building. I don't think I'd say necessarily utilities, but commercial type building structure to look at evaluating new location and possibly retrofitting another one. Architects are pretty much architects are architects. They're not engineers, I would say, if it was. I'm not sure. I disagree a little bit, Wayne. I don't know how he's designing a building for square footage. He's really not figuring out where we're going to put transformers, because that stuff's all going to stay out there where it is, and it's not going to be done. It's more of a space allocation and an office-type environment.
And costs and knowing
what
retrofitting and public agency rules are different than private
ADA,
rules.
What's required for ADA.
And new construction in this county and the time and everything else and knowing septics. And, okay, well, right. Is there anything else we need to do on that one? Do we need a motion to direct the manager to do that?
No, I think he can enter into the contract himself.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, do you normally bring back, hey, here's the guys I've had respond and give us a chance to look at them, or how does that work?
No, normally for this one, I would just select somebody.
He's a manager. He does. That's what he does.
Okay. That's why I'm asking. I'm actually,
we set policy. We don't micromanage.
Let me correct what I just said. He can issue the RFP himself. Whether he can issue the approve the contract himself, I'll have to look at your policy. Yeah. I don't know what it says offhand.
Okay.
I think the dollar amount's low enough, and it's in the budget already.
Okay.
To do that, so.
Well, we all want to get going. So.
Okay.
Great. Perfect.
Looks like
next
we're
to
your neck.
We're added on.
So, CAB report.
I would like us. I want to hear your input, but I think the appropriate thing is for each of the retiring CAB members if they got some sort of letter of appreciation signed by all of us.
That'd be good.
Absolutely.
On nice stationery and framed. So, Jim, if you want to draft up or with assistance from Debbie in terms of language to make it a nice expression.
Sure. They've done a lot for very little pay and a lot of headaches.
Yeah.
I appreciate what they do.
Well, and they're seeing the low income thing slowly finally develop, which was one of their big recommendations. So.
Yep. So the next item. Kevin, where do we stand? Are we hooked up to the cable?
No. Noinet, in the end of December, 1st of January, had a freeze, stop construction in their handholds, yearly thing. So we have a meeting tomorrow with Noinet as far as where we're going to bring the service back to. And at the end of the month, 1st of February, we will connect to Maristone for a variety, a couple customers, and ourselves. So I'm saying by the 10th of February, we'll be connected.
Has there been any more contact with CenturyLink?
We've talked to CenturyLink. They're still not sure which way they're going to go. They're looking at still possibly trying to put their own fiber in. They know it's going to cost them too much to go overhead because we have to change out so many poles per WASDOT. So they are looking at an underground option, but I don't see that happening. But
don't they still need to get easement from the Navy?
Yeah, but they have a department that does that. They've actually, a year ago, reached out to the Navy side of things.
So we can't reach agreement with them in turn?
They haven't even asked costs. Originally, we said we would lease some dark fiber.
Yeah.
And they came back and says, we don't want dark fiber, but we would possibly purchase fiber. You know, from us.
Right.
And then we went back then and says, well, you know, this is possibly agreeable to us. You need to, you know, make us a formal proposition. And nothing from then on. We've talked to them, but it's such a low priority. And depending on who got the bid or gets the bid for the AT&T tower, makes a huge difference to what CenturyLink's going to do on the island.
Okay.
I wish I had better news for you.
Well, there's some news. You're tying it together.
Our stuff will be tied together. There's a wireless provider there that will probably tie in the network. You know, a few things like that.
Is that on the causeway or? Because we're not letting them on those poles, right? Because they're.
First or 10th?
He said the 10th.
The causeway's going to basically become a bridge and they're going to get rid of our poles.
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
The causeway.
Yeah.
So, cab report would be done.
Okay. So, next cab meeting's on the 13th, and I think, Jeff, you're in the ring next. Our folks had some open meetings, training to do. Most of them have taken that training. There's still a couple of people that haven't. So we'll have those people in, the new members coming on. The lesson learned piece, I agree. I thought that was a good piece. There's going to be a subcommittee now that's looking at some goals and objectives and how they're communicating back and forth with the board and so on and with the public as well. So that'll be on the next agenda, and there'll be some other items on the agenda. We're working through that now, and I'll have a draft to you before the next meeting.
Is that meeting at 2 o'clock?
2:30.
2:30, thank you. I can be there.
Bill?
Regarding the cab, when I met with the local 2020 folks who wanted to work with us at booth at the home show, Pete Lorenzen was there. He had what I thought was an excellent recommendation to actually have a cab member at the table to as outreach to basically try to recruit some additional cab members mm-hmm. from that venue. And as Wayne knows, we get a lot of traffic at the home show. And like I said, I thought it was a good idea.
So I shared with the other commissioners a letter of intent and resume from a District 2 person. So we still need
two.
I
need two.
Yeah.
You need a total of four.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So have we had any, the ad was in the paper, have we had any other responses?
Two from District 1.
Not that I know of.
I've not seen them
because the address is Four Corners. So I don't know if Nat's getting them or what. I've not seen anything.
So, Pam, you're saying there was a couple of applicants from District 1?
No, you need two.
I got two openings for District 1 and no applications. Okay. Well, it sounds like I need to do some outreach.
So it could be an opportunity. The home show is February 25th at the Blue Heron Middle School.
We want to be sure we have a customer service rep there for sure. What day is it, Bill?
It's the Saturday, the 25th of February, I think.
That is a Saturday.
So if you guys agree with that, I'll work with Bill to get somebody there.
We set up on Friday, same deal?
Mm-hmm.
We also had an individual on the island that might be interested in getting a solar proposal to the cab. So if you get that information, just let me know. I'll make sure they're on the agenda.
Okay.
A what proposal?
Community solar proposal.
Hmm. So the next part's the manager's report. Personnel. We're losing Eric Pryor. He's given us notice, so he will be moving back home to Benson, PUD, I believe.
Benton,
yeah. I believe his dad works there, so he's been with us from the very beginning. He's done us a good job. All the consultants love him because he's really smart, and so and Kevin loves him because it's like a second son to him, but. He's moving on, so we'll have to figure out how to replace him. New hires, we had two people start work today, Melissa and Rita. One's an IT specialist, the other one is an accounting specialist, so a couple really good pickups, I think. A couple other ones coming up now. Staking engineer is a priority, given that Eric's leaving. We need somebody really fast to help out in doing those particular jobs. The telecom manager, as you saw, has been advertised, more waiting. Minute-taking job has also been advertised. New CFO, we did get three three finalists that we're going to talk tomorrow, I think, with the headhunter about, that seem to be qualified, and we'll get those to you so we can look at setting up interviews. Mm-hmm. The billing specialist, or an additional billing per or CSR, depending on the level, we're kind of waiting on the level of the low-income program to figure out how much we need there. And then the conservation special, I think we originally had budgeted against the EEI payments, but we won't have any of those because we're basically going to run out of money pretty quick, so we may have to be funding that out of operational funds instead of those monies. Now, labor negotiations will go into closed sessions here pretty close, but again, once it's all done, we'll try and line up all the policies, union exempts, and put the policies together that Debbie's doing so we're consistent. We talked about the spacing, so hopefully we'll see some resolution there to start moving people around. State auditors, we talked about the, I think it will be a good outbreak for probably the last one they do in public. They usually don't do that. Usually it's just for one commissioner, and he spreads it out and tells the rest of them. It's not usually a formal thing, but they felt we're doing a good job and would like it to be put out. And then the PUD, it looks like Bill got a different date than what I had originally, but we'll go on that. I have a meeting with the PUD managers on the 27th. I'll be talking about some things, questions I have with them on how they do things. Outages, I don't know if you want Kevin to give you a little outreach. It's amazing how much he knows. I'm just glad he's here. It was a regulator that went out. Regulators fell. We actually upgraded that substation considerably when we first took it over. In fact, replaced all the oil in the transformer with concerns about it. The major, but stuff happens. Equipment fails, even if it was new. He hasn't actually had an opportunity to take it apart yet, but it did fail. The good part is we put in a SCADA that alerted us so that we turned it off remotely on our own, and it didn't just blow up or anything. It was actually disconnected from the system before damage could be done to the transformer, because that would have been catastrophic or pretty bad. And so they reacted fairly quickly, got it out, figured out the problem, and remedied it in I thought, a fairly good fashion. Phone calls were handled fairly well. I thought the press was notified all the time. And, Don was working with the EOC. They had opened up or were at least talking about it. I don't know how much they actually got done.
They actually helped set up some warming stations for folks. And school district was open in Bayview, but they also had some other locations that had it gone longer, but Kevin got right with it and got everything back on. So.
You know, we ought to write them a letter.
Mm-hmm. Thanking. Right. Sorry, who?
The school and the people that had the warming station.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I will say this, you know, we've had the extra transformer. If it would have been a transformer, we could have, if we didn't have another transformer, it was a transformer, we'd probably be out of power for quite a while, because it takes, 6 weeks to 3 months to get a new transformer. People don't lend them out. Most people kind of have a spare, but they won't give you their spare, because if they give you their spare,
then they don't have a spare.
And what we had started to do is we had purchased one, and Kevin started to install it. I think we delayed it because we were worried about budgetary problems. But it's located over at the Irondale station. The idea is from there it could reach out in almost any direction and augment or replace anyone that had problems within the core area here. Part of the automation allows you contingencies that you could do that, and we're getting better. We got a lot of SCADA that wasn't around before. PSE didn't have it. And so when things happen, we can remotely do things that would allow us, once that substation up is, maybe even to pick up the load and move it around. There's other things we need to do. A lot of three-phase we still need to connect, undergrounding, a lot of things that will make these outages even less of a problem. But given all in all, I think it was handled, and I think we had the contingencies in place. And again, thank goodness Kevin was here, because I don't think Jimmy was ready to throw the switch on that transformer. He was a little spooked about whether it would blow or something. But anyway, it all worked out fairly well. There's things we can do better. I don't know, Kevin, if you want to pat yourself on the back some more. Or
the crew did a really good job. I think that shows right now we could lose a piece of equipment, and a lot of people go out. You know, we have a lot of inventory, but as you guys drive around, everything is so specialized. If I lose one piece of equipment and I don't have a replacement, Jim's right, it takes an outage that could be done in 12 hours or 24 hours into people are out a week. You know, you have to make, and they wouldn't be out a week. You'd do different things. But, it takes a lot to do our business.
I have one question, Kevin. I got a call from a gentleman in the South Bay. And he just had a question about why the North Bay was on and the South Bay was not on. And I don't know if that's an easy explanation to...
The North Bay people have more money.
Yeah. Obvious.
Well, I told him my parents live in North Bay so that we had rerouted the power to their house. No, so, but seriously, is there a simple answer to that or not so simple?
We could have packed the load all the way to the South Bay. We have some things in... the works that would allow us to push it further, but without reconfiguring the whole system, and once we actually had the transformer on at about 4:30, it just took us a long time to pick up the coal load. We had to pick up very small chunks. So.
Is the North Bay and the South Bay fed differently from the infrastructure we have?
It's easier, yes, in a nutshell, okay. From Chimicum substation. I could pack everything other than like the Shine area fairly easy through Chimicum substation. But even that, we had some low voltage, some issues that we had to...
Okay.
I think the answer is when it breaks, you move gradually from the point that has power to where it doesn't, and they just happen to be on the end of the line. I did talk to him. He seemed like a good guy. But I said in order to bring him back up, we'd have to use the Quilicine substation and move from the south to the north, and it just isn't really practical. So I think he understood that you do it, and then you have priority transmission substations.
Well, I think all those things you went through, from the SCADA lines to everything else, just provides an example of how our having our own local PUD here, that outage was a lot shorter than it would have been if PSC was still the utility, that there's a lot of value that's being created. So thanks.
Again, thanking Kevin was here to do it. So the pole attachments, I'd like to get with EES. I need to figure out where we are and everybody else is as far as pole attachments. EES did do a review for us. I think it's still kind of sitting there. We thought Pacific PUD would settle everything, and I don't think it's actually been settled totally as far as what the rates are. So we need to relook at that. BPA, we are signing up again. Like I said before, they want us to re-sign up with the OAT outage automated transmission industry to control outages throughout everything, which we're doing. Kevin's working with the city and with the PT leader, I guess, for a lighting article on the overhead lights in town and out of town also, and trying to get the right voltage and the right amount of light to color of light to show up where it is, and going through now with a demo with various wavelengths and frequencies to see if we can get everybody happy. The metering RFP, I think we got a good answer. Kim talked to the state auditor office about what is required, whether it had to be a bid or an RFP, and because of the electronic computer nature of it, looks like we can go with an RFP. Rick's looking at that to make sure we make sure there's no parts of it that wouldn't be qualified on that. So we're trying to get that in a final draft form so that we can move forward on issuing that.
Was this? I'm sorry, the one you just mentioned, is that the topic we talked about last time, that bulk purchase of equipment, or is this something?
Yeah, no, this is the same one. It's the RFP. Part of the issue was when we talked about, and you almost wonder if the article is OBE, because the paper was there and put it in the leader the next day. But part of the issue was what format we had to put had to be a bid, or could it be an RFP?
Okay, so this is the meters, not the transformers and the other equipment we talked about.
This is strictly the meter one.
That was my only question.
So once we get the RFP in a position where we feel comfortable putting out, we'll come back to the board and say, okay, how do we want to communicate this? But I think now at least we have guidance that an RFP will meet the requirements of the state bidding contracts.
Okay, thank you.
telecom, again, we the next hire, maybe that individual, putting a lot on the person. I don't think we've gotten too many responses, quite honestly, from the one. Yeah, it's not too many. For the position, but that should be great to have to help Kevin and Bill and kind of put the focus on somebody that will be the attention or the person to get take the lead on that. I did say, too, we talked about this, you know, we still have that issue with the, not issue, but with Team Jefferson. You may want to look again at their study on perceived versus actual reality of the availability of telecom that they offer to do. Water, we're signing a satellite management agreement with the county for the Brennan Community Center. There's been a change again in the water requirements for operators, so we may be getting more of these places that didn't have licensed operators to ask us to be their operator. In this case, it's the Brennan Community Center. Talked to the state, I think I told you last time, about the Brennan sewer. The state would just soon get rid of the sewer and give it to us, but we said we're not going to do it unless it makes sense. There will probably be a meeting down there. I will be working with Tammy on the plant for the water systems. She's getting close to having it done for the electrical. There was some confusion about what was plant, what wasn't, with our U.S. and the state auditor. I think we've got that ironed out. Customers, the bills now have date due on them. It doesn't say due upon receipt. It has an actual due date on it. So that has been completed. Schedules 7 and 8 have been consolidated, and the base has been raised. Just at the last cycle was the first one to go through that. EES, I sent you, I think, a copy of their final cost of service study that's been completed. And then shutoff status. I think she started with like 50. She called a lot of people. She had it down to 18, I think, at the end of the day that we'll have for shutoff. She's hoping to get it down maybe below that. The shutoff is for tomorrow for a number of people that haven't paid. So it's 18 at the most. That was at about 4 o'clock or so. And so hopefully she has it down. They have until tomorrow at 7 to get their payment in, I think, for her to do it. We skipped 1 week of shutoffs 2 weeks ago because it was just so cold. Last week we didn't have shutoffs because it wasn't a billing cycle week. So,
Jim, on the shutoff issue, isn't there a state law about a period of time in the winter where they can make a request not to have?
Yes, and it's on the back, and we tell them that all the time. And what they do is they're supposed to do it ahead of time. They're supposed to do it when they get their bill and their notice, right, and all that. But we pretty much allow it till the last second. Usually they come in after they've been shut off. It's the only time they quite honestly come in. What it does is allow them to pay 1/12 of their outstanding balance and no more than 7% of their payment. And then that goes through March, and then in March it kicks back up, and we say, okay, now you need to start paying them out to get it down.
And I asked you for a shutoff report, and you had on there last January, I think, that there was no shutoffs, and it was probably because people were exercising that. Are you saying it's likely that people are not going to exercise that option in the...
No, I think it was because we may have just stopped it for a while and made the determination of the board that we're not going to shut it off. And so there are periods, no matter what, you have shutoffs. It could be the middle of summer and you'd have them just because people move or don't pay or something like that. So the numbers aren't actually that bad, but it does get them to come in too and make the arrangements.
Right.
Otherwise, if you don't turn them off, first of all, then they know you're not going to turn them off.
Right.
I think the numbers are reasonable, and we work with them as much as possible to get them back on.
But a lot of them, I don't want to say a lot of them, but a number of them don't honor their agreement.
Right.
And then they're mad because we turned them off. Well, I mean, call us. Let us know what's going on.
There's always going to be some element of shutoffs. Yeah.
Fire District, we're going to meet with them on the 7th with the county to discuss the Fire District's request that the privilege tax be spread out equally. Maristone Island, they came back, the state did, and said, no, now you have to pay for your cost to move them. They backed off. And that was basically DOT went and got an opinion from the state attorney general that works with DOT. And they said, no, you need to charge them based on our franchise. So I asked them to send the franchise, and I said, we'll probably be fighting this again as it comes forward. I think the guy from DOT actually felt sympathetic for us because he didn't think we had to pay it, but his attorney general said, no, you need to charge him. So we'll see where that goes. It's not in our budget any place, so it's one of those things. I said, well, you know, the pressure may drop 20 pounds on everybody on that side of the island because we don't have the money to do it. Can we just send them to you? So
you're talking about the Merrowstone Island
Bridge, yeah.
And I thought I read through that in it. If we get to charge our cost for that, what do you got?
No, they, part of our franchise with the state requires us, anytime they do road construction, where they require us to move our utilities, the utility has to pay for that. And that's not unreasonable. Our argument on this case, though, wasn't the state DOT that's doing this project, it's the Fish Coalition, I believe.
Yeah, so I guess the sentence I was looking at is facilities located in the WASDOT right-of-way will be relocated at the cost of the PUD per the terms of the WASDOT franchises.
Correct.
So I guess I was assuming we would bill per our cost, and what you're saying is this, no, we suck this up as our cost.
Well, yeah, that's us.
Per their franchise.
Yes, that's what they say. And originally they came out and said, no, you shouldn't have to do it because this isn't a washed up project, and you know, I was totally surprised. I don't mind paying some of it because that seems reasonable. But we just spent lots of money to directional bore and go underneath that with the water side, and it just kind of irked me a little, so I wrote a shot them off a letter real quick, and they called me and said, okay, we'll send you the franchise and da da da. I said, well, we'll probably, you know, the worst thing is if we, what a lot of costs will be just the temporary part. Of course, if we don't do that, everybody's pressure will drop 20 pounds on that side of the island, and they won't have fire flow.
Well, it's pretty annoying because they got a bunch of money as a grant to do this, and everybody gets paid except us.
What's annoying, Jeff, is there's no salmon-bearing streams either island.
Don't go
I'm
there.
I'm a fish guy. I know what's going on here.
Anyway, that's where we are. We will probably draft up a letter and maybe have the board sign it saying, you know, this is not... but at least give us 3 years to budget it. So, county comp plan, we did forward the request and said, yeah, send us a drawing of how we want it to look.
Will that include the city?
They don't know. I'll have to check.
We need to be sure they're building 400 new homes in Port Townsend.
I think the city already completed their comp plan update.
The other thing I have here is a chart that you just say is billing for January, less PP paper. It's just a little spreadsheet. It's hard to read because that's in yellow, the highlighted. But I just wanted to point out that the billing for the second cycle, which is about 8,000 people, I think it's PP's cycle, was 1.7 million roughly. Compared to last year, that's 450,000 more.
480.
Yeah, now 56,000 of it's for the rate increase, but that's just the rate increase for the base, so that you can kind of calculate that. But you can see it's not totally out of line with January of 14. We made a lot of money during that period too because it was colder weather. So the good news is we've generated a lot more revenue as a result of it being extremely cold. And you'll see that again cycle 3 because it's just going out. So this warm period here in cycle 4 and stuff. So we've generated, this year should be a lot better when we do our tier and stuff, should help. The bad thing is again, it we've generated a lot more revenue from people and pay their bills. There's two other charts I had in there just so you know, it kind of reflects where our balance when I call the treasure account, and to me that's kind of the money in our checking/savings account that's available. If you look to December, you can see it's dropped about $2 million, $1.5 million for the last 2 years. Hopefully that we've done a rate increase, so that shouldn't drop quite as bad, but we are hiring more people, and so that's... but the weather's cold, and so maybe we'll be doing a lot better.
Yeah.
Upcoming events, I think Energy Northwest is going to buy their rep tomorrow just to say hi to Debbie and me. The state audit out is on the 15th, and I had those other meetings. I will write in the paper that two more commissioners will be attending a bunch of the... Are two more? Are you going to the luncheon?
I'm going to go to luncheon too. So if you could make that a public meeting, also.
I'll tell them that you're both in attendance.
Thank you.
Communications, you can see the West Canal community. It sounds like they're, I don't know if they're completely done with their project. You can see they're kind of frustrated, but they will be coming back. But it looks like they're kind of ended or going on a hiatus for a little bit down there for their telecom. And then I put the letter from the state on the...
Did any of you guys see the Hood Canal communication trucks down there? Man, I saw them brand new.
Mm. Do they know about our workshop with Kitsap in case any of those guys want to come up for that?
Not yet, but we can definitely let them know, given that I don't know if it's made it or not.
I mentioned it. It was February 13th.
Yeah, I know.
February 13th, at what time? We're going to try 11.
Or noon, I think you said.
Noon.
Yeah, we can definitely have Jim know. Jim actually worked for Kids at PUD for a while, anyway, so he's actually the
communications director.
Well, he's administrator for the PUDA for a couple years, too. The whatever it was.
Well, you can't fault them for trying. They've been very diligent on all their communications and everything else. So
absolutely.
Upcoming schedule for the next one, we'll definitely have a, it sounds like we'll have a special meeting to discuss the low income. Other than that, at the next regular board meeting, there's a number of those resolutions that we had that we will push up. The assessment, we basically think we're on discussion at this point. Is there anything else you would want on the next board agenda?
Well, you're going to bring that RFQ back. We authorize you to do the RFQ.
Yeah, I'll do that. I think you're going to get that one going.
It'd be nice to have a lighter meeting for once these two. Long.
So then the next thing on it is the closed session, so we can discuss the union negotiations.
Let the president handle this.
So it is now 8:40, and we are going to convene a closed session under the provisions of RCW 4230.140. Section 4, paragraph A, as follows. Collective bargaining sessions with employee organizations, including contract negotiations, grievance meetings, and a discussion related to the interpretation or application of a labor agreement, or B, that portion of a meeting during which the governing body is planning or adopting the strategy or position to be taken by the governing body during the course of any collective bargaining, professional negotiations or grievance or mediation proceedings or reviewing the proposals made in the negotiations or proceedings while in progress. And we anticipate 30 minutes for that.
Can we do it 15?
We can do it in 10.
Yeah, 10. We'll do it 10.
We anticipate 10 minutes. So we will reconvene at 8:52.
I'll be right back.
Keep having these long meetings, don't you?
Yeah.
I'm starving to death here. Yeah. I've got
next time I'm going to knock you down that
far. I'm just slumber bar right now.
I'm cowering.
I'm pissed. My gracious.
Does he know this information?